Hey, this is Engineer Eric from the Jimmy Dunn Show. Two things here real quick. First, we would like to thank and welcome all the new listeners from WIRN and give a big shout-out to James the Man for broadcasting us on WIRNonline.com. You can listen to the Jimmy Dunn Show online at WIRNonline.com Fridays from 5 to 7 p.m. and Saturdays 4 to 6 p.m. And any listeners, if you get a chance, go ahead and rate us at WIRNonline.com. As always, you can listen to the Jimmy Dunn Show live on ZTLK.com Saturdays from 3 to 5 p.m. That's www.ZTLK.com. Secondly, the recording computer crashed at the end of the first hour of this show, so we threw a mini-disc recorder in the loop as a backup. Thank God, because Jimmy's track only got partially recorded even after the restart. What you're about to hear is the first 74 minutes that the mini-disc picked up of the show. Unfortunately, the show got cut off prematurely at 74 minutes, so you'll just have to wait until the next Jimmy show or read Parkinson's Law to figure out how the Medicare story ends. Now, without further ado, let's go. All right.
Here we go. Got it.
Here it goes.
Closing main breaker.
You know what that means, boys and girls.
It's time for the Jimmy Dunn Show.
Hey!
Okay, this is the second Jimmy Dunn Show today.
Well, don't confuse our listeners.
No, that's right. That's right. This is going to be an abbreviated, interesting session.
Because we lost the stupid show.
The stupid show, that's right.
Got stupidly lost by the
stupid computer.
Software. Has my stupid computer stupidly crashed.
Yeah. So we're going to try and run through it again on some of the stuff we talked about.
Right.
This is Jimmy. We got Counselor Curtis here.
Hey!
Had Jack Rhodes. He was really cool.
Yeah, had Jack Rhodes.
He had to leave. Because
Gino's going to step in.
Yeah, Gino's going to step in.
Gino's going to step in.
And we got porn star Laura in the background.
Woo!
That's right. Yeah, Laura, darling, you're welcome to chime in anytime you want. You have something to say? A little generational
right.
conflict.
You know, or you could, you know, change out of that thong into something less revealing.
We'll change out of it into less revealing.
I don't know. I don't know. Okay, I'm just sorry. I'm distracted.
Okay. Well, let me just say first of all, while we're doing this, thanks to the Hanger Dogs for our cups.
Yeah!
My God, they set the bar way too high for us.
Yeah.
Stratosphere. It's one of these things that we set the bar here at the Jimmy Dunn Show as people do with Limbo.
Mm-hmm.
The bar is so low nobody can get under it here at the Jimmy Dunn Show. The Hanger Dogs have set the bar stratosphere. I mean, there's nobody that can get over the bar with these cups. They're
unbelievable. We got the best mugs from these
guys. No, we do have the best mugs. I understand that they're going to start, instead of passing out their own mugs, they're going to pass out ours.
I would too.
They did.
In fact, we should come up with our own Hanger Dogs merchandise.
I thought about doing this, except I know we'd be arrested. it's one of those things that you remember in the old days. It used to be that you take your films into the local 24-hour place, and when you go to pick them up, the cops are there.
Right.
Yeah,
because
they know.
Because of the pictures.
Perverted Jimmy is dropping off his another round of...
So, no, I was very good about this. I would usually send somebody else in to pick them up.
Oh, well, that's smart.
And that way
hence I... Hence, you're still here.
Grandma.
Yeah, that's grandma. Right, Grandma. Mm-hmm. That's right. Don't look at them, Grandma. Just bring them out. Here's the money. So anyway...
So what do we got today?
Okay, what we got today is, first of all, I did want to run through real quick here on our... The people that have been searching for us, we apparently pop up number one on Kate Moss and fake boobs. I'm not sure what that's all about. Although those people are usually from Italy or Spain or Romania, it says here. No, that's Romagna.
Well, it makes sense to me because we're a bunch of big fake boobs here.
Ah! We're fake. And we're,
and
boobs.
We're boobs.
That's right. Everybody knows that. Everybody that listens to the show. Right, I'm going to go through the list here real quick. I did want to talk about, did anybody want to talk about Rosie versus Trump?
No.
No, okay, good. How about
I know about that. What not?
Well, that's been... It is fascinating to me that something that as vitally important as Rosie versus Trump actually commands the airwaves for 24/7 for like a week at a time. I mean, this is like so inconsequential. Like, who cares? And obviously, Trump, multi-billionaire, is as if he needs the money...
Is he trying to adopt Rosie's kid or something?
I don't think so. I think he's trying to... promote his Miss USA, right?
Yeah,
Yeah.
Okay.
And Miss Teen USA. And Miss
so what, he won't let Rosie be a contestant or something? Or
no,
what?
I don't think she tried. I mean, of course, she's sort of a dykey person anyway.
That's
she?
Okay.
Okay, that's good.
Okay, with
that's,
that.
Anyway, the deal is, no, they've had a big...
I mean, so was Miss Denver or Miss Nevada, whatever.
Oh, Miss Nevada got booted. She got booted out for doing...
It's just so amazing, people, that they're so afraid of sexuality these days and sex and all that stuff.
What's astounding,
they got
of
nude,
course...
nude, like, sculptures and stuff in Europe. And you just walk up on the street and all of a sudden get your eye poked out.
That's true. Well, I did see where one of the big photos that people take in Europe is they walk up to one of the ladies. There's some nude lady with her hand out, mm-hmm. and what other dudes...
she gets a surprise?
Well, that's right. Guys walk up and lay something in the hand there, right, and have their picture taken. it's a part of their anatomy. And
Wonder which part that would be, Jimmy.
Okay.
Hey, who was tuning in and listening to us recently?
Well, we've had the usual cadre. We do Murfreesboro, Tennessee, and... Brew, Tennessee, right, okay. Woodland Hills, California. But we have France. I thought it was interesting. There's a tie-in here. On Alta Vista, we got searched for fake boobs from La Crosse, Wisconsin. And that, of course, dovetails right into the Duke rape case.
Oh, hey!
And actually, we have a pre-segue into that from the Hanger Dogs.
We do?
Yeah.
We'll play
a question.
That.
A question, yes. Watch this.
A question.
Ready?
Jimmy Doan Show. Woo. Hey, this is a question for Counselor Curtis from the Hanger Dogs. We want to know, in the Duke rape case, can the parents or even the individuals that the prosecutor has basically hamstrung in this issue, can they sue in civil court either the DA or the state of North Carolina to garner whatever legal fees they've had to pay up until the point that they've dropped the rape case?
Garner?
And that's our question. Hope you can give us a good answer. Well, you'll give us a good answer. We know, because we're the Hanger Dogs, and you are, of course, Counselor Curtis.
Hey.
I know the answer to that one.
And the answer is?
No.
No.
There you go. There's your good answer.
That's it.
No, wait a minute. You say no, but what about the idea of prosecutorial misconduct?
Well, okay, here's the deal. The answer is no, unless that they can prove, or allege anyway, right, that the prosecutors were willfully malicious. That is to say, they intentionally did something, you know, outside of the purview of their job, like something criminal against these defendants. If they could prove that... or at least allege that, then they could at least survive. Hey, you forgot your T-shirt. Then they could at least survive. Never mind. That's Gino's.
That's mine. Back off there, Sparky.
Back off.
I guess yours in the kitchen or something. Or I don't know where it is.
We got T-shirts, too, besides the mugs. This is great.
Why does he get to leave with the porn star? That's all.
I'm cool.
What all happened there?
He's the engineer.
Because I'm cool. Yeah.
So if they could prove that there was willful misconduct against these guys.
That whole press conference that they did the other day was pretty much accusing him of that.
Well, that was a press conference.
Right.
Yeah. What's happening there is the defense attorney is trying to shame the prosecutor into dropping the cases.
Right. Right. And so they dropped part of it.
Right.
They dropped the part that they had no chance on.
Right, exactly.
And then in order to save face, he had to keep up the other part.
Yeah, and there's no way he's going to prosecute this case.
Let me follow up. Even Jimmy knows a little bit about this. So I don't have to be an attorney on some of this stuff to understand. The barrier for proof is quite high. One of the problems is, as soon as you allege this sort of thing, you go in front of a judge, and the judge will summarily dismiss this stuff before you ever get to a jury. If you could get this, and if the judge says, well, you know, you might have a case, I'll let the jury decide. If you get that far,
right,
then there's a real good chance. Let me put it this way. There's certainly a better chance, because you have a better chance of convincing jurors on something like this, on the fairness, unfairness, whatever you want to call it,
right,
than you do the judge, say. That's one guy. The judge, if he doesn't summarily do a summary dismissal, as they call it, then you might be able to go to trial. But again, the barrier generally is quite high, and you have to have really, you have to have something in there that shows that you really had it in for these guys, some way, shape, or form, and that you went outside. Well, that you like when you weren't working on your regular job. That at 3 o'clock in the morning, you snuck out of the house. You went over. You planted evidence. You know.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, you really have to have, and then you have, and then somebody videotaped the whole thing.
Right.
Yeah. Other than that,
well, they're alleging everything right.
Well,
now,
I know, but I mean, if you, what he does is he says, oh, this was just in the normal job. This is normal job stuff. Well, the problem is my understanding. Is that there was exculpatory or near exculpatory, if not totally exculpatory, evidence that was withheld, and everybody in the prosecutor's office knew it and did not turn it over for like 8 months.
Well, that probably won't rise to the level that they need.
See, that's the thing.
It's a discovery violation.
Right.
Unless they had demands to compel discovery and things like that, and they didn't turn them over, and they could show that it was, you know, in violation of the court's order to...
Right. Well, that's what I'm saying. The barrier is quite high.
It is.
You really and because generally you have something, but sovereign immunity or something along those lines.
Exactly.
You can do no wrong.
Right. And they've just begun to whittle away at that with a statute called 1985 here in Florida, which does what I just said.
Right.
But I mean, basically, the prosecutor's got to eat some crow to drop a case, and it's hard pressed to get anybody.
Well, again, as I've mentioned so many times, truth takes a vacation when your ego or livelihood is on the line, and this happens with everybody. This is a classic 12-step program. The first thing in the 12-step program is denial. You have to get over your denial.
Right.
You have to admit, and that is the most difficult thing for people to do. When you talk about rationalization. And when people are doing anybody can see that you're doing something wrong, but the ego is so strong, and especially if you're putting your kids in college.
Yeah, well, you don't want to admit that you made a mistake on it. Well, it's his job to pick the people who are guilty, and so he wants to believe that he's done the right, made the right choice. I mean, it's only the fact that this girl's panties turned up with goo from seven different people on it.
Well, was it ectoplasm or what?
Something out of slime. Out of Ghostbusters.
Right.
From
the rest of the town.
Right. Not these.
She's a whore. Hello.
Exactly. You know. Sorry, but.
Yeah. And so the deal is it all turns on her statements. She's the only witness. And of course,
at this point,
obviously, the defense is going to destroy her credibility.
Yeah. Well, she's flip-flopped a bunch of times. But the problem is that these guys face potentially so much time if they lose at trial.
Right.
That they may well cop a plea.
See, this, of course, is what's one of the things that I see, and you've probably seen this before, especially with DCF, with the children's things and so forth. They trump up these charges, and they say, well, you know, you might be innocent, but, you know, the 1-in-100 shot that we get you guilty, you're going away for life. Yeah, you do 20 years, you lose everything.
Exactly.
And, of course, especially with, and I digress just slightly, but mostly with parents with children. I mean, you threaten a mother with loss of their children. I mean, you can have a 1 in a million chance of winning. The prosecutor can have a 1 in a million chance of winning the case against the mother, but the mother will still take the plea deal because she don't want to take that much of a chance.
Exactly.
And the question I have is, is there anything to do about that particular?
Well, the thing to do is what I mentioned in the last show, which is we should create lesser categories of crime. That is, right now, the lowest level of crime you can commit in the state of Florida is a second degree misdemeanor. It's still punishable by up to 2 months in jail.
How about a third and fourth and fifth degree misdemeanor?
Well, that's what they should have. They should have a third at least, and probably a fourth.
How about just letting some of these people go?
Well,
I mean, some of this stuff is mischief that they're putting people in jail for.
Well, it is, and it wouldn't be a big problem for the citizens if they could challenge it in court. See, the problem is that you bust them for mischief, and it's a little second-degree misdemeanor, but they're still facing 2 months in jail.
Right.
So they're not going to go to court
and
take the prosecutors to task and make them prove their case.
Right.
And if the punishment maximum was 1 night in jail, then they would take all the prosecutors to trial. It would back up the courts.
That's
and
true.
The prosecutors would have to choose more selectively which cases they really wanted to prosecute.
That's true.
And so that's the solution on that end, is to have some things that people can withstand if they happen to lose.
Well, in this particular case, in the Duke thing, of course, it looks like there was some other things involved, like his election and the pandering to the black community. He decided to be the white Jesse Jackson or something.
Could have been. I didn't follow the political side.
Well, there was apparently an election, and as I say, there was a race card in here someplace. And,
well, he certainly would pick up some support by.
I guess, and that
at least
I think
in his
that
mind.
One of the yeah right, and the deal is, it's one of these things. He apparently has the tiger by the tail and just can't let it go. I mean, once you've made this statement, he's painting himself into a corner.
Yeah.
And now, of course, it's going to be what they've dropped.
And you watch what'll happen. Actually, I think the guys will push it on this case because I think probably the Duke people hired smart enough lawyers to push this all the way.
Yeah.
And in the end, the prosecutors will drop it. But I think that there's a good chance that what'll happen is they'll offer him a deal they can't resist, like community service hours for not even having to go through the trial.
Right.
The kids will take it, and then the prosecutor will jump up and down and say, look,
we won.
I told you they were guilty from the beginning. We got them. And so that's my prediction.
Okay.
That sounds good to me.
That sounds good to me. I was thinking about something else.
Hope that answers your questions, hanging out.
Yeah, we didn't take too long, did we, on that? No, let me just see here. Speaking of the courts-type stuff here, I wanted you to come in on this, the title. It was a column by James J. Kilpatrick called Bong Hits the Court, and this is the one that the Supreme Court of the United States has agreed to hear a case from Alaska that James J. Kilpatrick says didn't deserve attention. The case stems from the punishment imposed upon a high school student for publicly unfurling a 20-foot banner that read, Bong Hits for Jesus. This banner was apparently as a parade was going by of some kind, and the principal came out, reprimanded, tore the thing down, went nuts, kicked the kid out for 10 days, suspended him, and so forth. And this apparently it had to do with the Olympic torch. Was being carried from Juneau to someplace in Alaska, and
this guy's just expressing his
right First Amendment.
Yeah,
and what I find interesting about this is that on the side of the school board and the principal are Bill Bennett, who he was a drug czar,
as you
know, and he also wrote the Book of Virtues or whatever. And another guy is who was the prosecutor that spent the millions to impeach
Kenneth Starr.
Ken Starr
right.
is also, I mean, you talk about high-powered people in Alaska. What is all that about?
They're jumping behind the moral bandwagon, which they think is out there. I mean, they think they've been convinced and seduced that a substance can turn a good person into an evil person.
But, I mean, this was just a sign that said, Bong Hits for Jesus, and I guess that they kicked him out because it was promoting drug use.
Whatever they want to call it, what's happening is the schools are expanding their controls to the kids.
Right.
And now
this was
off school grounds, off school times, and off school purposes.
Right.
That's what this case is about. Something that happened completely extra school.
Right.
And yet here's this kid facing what will amount to school punishment.
Right.
And it just goes to show you what they're trying to, if you want to see what's going to happen to us, look to see what they're doing to the kids.
That's right.
Because the kids put up no fight. And every time somebody jumps in and says, I want to protect the kids, they're allowed to do everything and just massacre the kids' rights in order to, quote unquote, protect them.
Well, that's what you do. I mean, if you're going to protect somebody, you put them in a jail cell under protective custody.
Yep.
That's what the lockdown is all about. What I've talked about before, the protection is going to be essentially lockdown. And now you're protected. You can't do anything, but at least you're not going to, quote, die.
Right.
Headed for the Matrix.
And it's okay for them to do that to kids. I mean, that's what's
happening.
Well,
the thing I look at on this is that this is what the kids are learning. We are reaping now the rewards of what has gone previously. These, apparently, the Ken Starrs of the world and the principal and so forth grew up in an environment where this sort of thing was all right now. And as it gets worse and worse, you think about this kid here, the student, he's going to learn that it's perfectly fine to prosecute or suspend or somebody for anything that you don't agree with, essentially. And so when this kid gets to be an attorney or governor or whatever it is, or his ilk, his group, his Y-gen or X-gen or whatever they call the current generation of people? I don't even know.
Is it Y?
Okay. Anyway, when they get to be in control, this will be the norm for them. Hey, my parents did it to me. I can do it to you. And double down. I double do it. You know, that kind of thing. Yeah. So
throw you in jail. Give you the criminal thing. Well, it's happened, and unfortunately, it's all snowballed since Justice Holmes' original proclamation that you can't yell fire in a crowded theater.
You know, this to me, and this was the first assault on the First Amendment.
It was.
And up until that time, and I have never understood that. I always thought it was perfectly legal. I mean, why would it be illegal just to holler fire, because what if no damage is done? I mean, today.
Well, right. That's the whole point. You see, he imagined in his mind that damage would be done, and that because people would stampede or whatever it was.
What if they don't?
They don't. Trust me. I've been in the theater with the fire alarm going off. Okay. Trust me. And nothing happens. Americans, you wait to see the smoke. That's you wait to see. And if somebody
then
runs
you
in.
You trample.
Right. Well, if somebody runs in and they're on fire,
then
okay.
Then you got a problem.
Right. But then you need to be trampling.
But I would say then it would be illegal to run into a theater on fire.
Exactly. You know, you can't do any damage. There should be no
smoking or fire allowed in this theater.
That's right. No big, large fires.
No, especially people.
Right. Especially.
It does ruin my weekend. I was. That's
that's what you were going to do?
That's what you were going to do? That's
I
got to
go streaking through the movie theater. I had the
kerosene and the match ready to go. Dang.
Yeah. So.
No, but you're right. I mean, and the I look at the Bill of Rights, of course, which was never. People think that the Bill of Rights gives us rights, and it doesn't at all. Mm-hmm. If it's just enumerating some rights that we have.
Right.
These are just as a suggestion. By the way, you have the right to free speech and so forth. You have the right to bear arms and religion and so forth and so on. And what they've done is, since Justice Holmes on this particular case, they've nickel and dimed this damn First Amendment to death. Yeah. So that today, I mean, can you imagine bringing suit for burning flags and that sort of thing under First Amendment stuff? It's just...
Well, exactly. And what they should do, hopefully, they will go ahead and when the Supreme Court accepts this certiorari, that is referral to their court, what they ought to do is they ought to go back and overrule Holmes's original prohibition.
Well, of course, you know, again, I've said this before, they had a perfect chance
to overrule.
Of the overrule the most horrendous ruling,
yep.
The ruling of all that ruined this country, the one that of the three or four rulings that destroyed this country, the 1942 ruling of
Wickard versus Filburn,
Wickard, and they had the perfect chance
to overrule it,
and they blew it. I cannot imagine.
Well, and let me tell you, they're going to do the same thing here. They're going to blow this opportunity. I guarantee you, they're going to make it so that the school can, in fact, inhibit this guy's speech.
That's what I
believe.
Well,
I
tell you.
It's unfortunate because they should overrule the original one.
And no, you're right.
Justice Black had it the best. He said it is exactly this kind of speech that needs protection.
Well, the simple fact is the First Amendment was designed to protect political speech and unpleasant speech. You don't have to protect pleasant speech.
Exactly.
I mean, if you go
that
off
was
somebody,
Black's point.
That was the whole point. You know, you don't have to protect the nice stuff. That's all done anyway. Nobody's going to be upset. The only stuff you have to protect is the stuff that you object to.
Right.
And the same thing with the right to bear arms. I mean, everybody knew that you can do it pretty much what you want. But
Hank have set up bear arms on your wall. It's a bear, everyone has a right.
Well,
oh, you got to watch Family Guy. I'm sorry.
Jeez. Oh, this is the one with the B-E-A-R arms.
Yeah.
I thought it was the B-A-R-E arms.
No.
Okay. But it's the right. So cute. Oh, my God.
Okay.
Gino.
I'm over here.
Yeah, I can tell you. Well, yes, that's right.
Yeah. I'm a fill-in. Here we go.
That's it. No, you're doing well. You're doing well. So anyway. You did well. You did well. So anyway, let's move along.
Okay.
The thing we did talk about a little bit was the Bush is caved totally in the entire known universe.
He's caved, man. He rolled so fast. I mean,
this is on the minimum wage.
He spun.
He's rolled on everything.
He's rolled on everything. He's rolled on everything. But this is mind-boggling to me.
Well, I don't think he's rolled on everything. He's kept the war firmly in his sights.
He fired Rummy. You know, essentially, he fired Rummy because of that.
Well, that's true. He fired, and we'll see.
He buckled, and that was certainly a political decision, if you want
to
call it.
Sure.
And handled so poorly.
And I don't think he believes what the new philosophy is. That is to say, I don't think he's personally in line with what the predominant view is. That is to say, you know, bring the boys home or whatever. I think he still believes what Rummy and those guys taught him, which
again,
was,
I don't
you got to follow this through the end.
Exactly.
Well, I don't have a problem with leaders being leaders. That is to
Me
say,
either.
If you, for whatever reason, if the
that's
leader,
what he believes.
Yeah. But do it right. I mean, don't the way we've. When you think about it for a second, we haven't won a war since World War II. We have monkeyed around.
You're absolutely
and
right.
And they have monkeyed around. And one of the reasons is this. I can tell you this is what. Because actually, in spite of what they've said, our way of life has not been threatened. I remember the Vietnam. No, the fact is, we can send 500,000 guys in there in Vietnam, get 50,000 of them killed. We can send 500,000 guys, or however many of the 250,000 people, over to Iraq.
It was 600,000 the first time.
In where?
It was a half first, million the first in the Gulf first Gulf War. Yeah. It's only about
140, 140.
Right.
And what we can do is we can pick up our ball and go home.
Yeah.
And when all is said and done.
It's third page news for us here.
Right. And I can remember, this was before you guys were born, but I can remember that one of the big arguments around the mid-60s in the Vietnam War was guns and butter. There was no sacrifice. There's been no sacrifice for us here on the continental United States since the Second World War. In the Second World War, I mean, they had the tin drives, the steel drives, the copper drives. They had all this stuff. I mean, they had rationing. They had everything in the world. But the Korean War? No,
well, it was an actual threat in World War II.
Well, that's debatable. I'm not going to go there. But again, the deal is that since then, Korea, Vietnam, and other than Grenada, maybe.
Bosnia, Herzegovina.
That was a blip.
Yeah, well, I mean, the
Panama. There have been about 65 armed excursions since World War II. Actually, since Vietnam.
But I mean, even you just know about the big ones. We haven't won any of them. And I'm wondering, if you're going to go in, you win.
Exactly. Well, that's what he's preaching right now.
Except for the fact that it's pretty obvious at this point that this, I can tell you right now what's going to happen is there's going to be some kind of withdrawal and the poop's going to hit
collapse
the fan again.
Chaos. Look, you can't take over a country and then give it away. I mean, it just doesn't work. You have to, if you conquer it, you conquer it, you own it, you live it. You take it. That's the way to do it. You take
lessons from Sun Tzu.
Yeah.
Or from Alexander the Great.
Exactly.
Or whatever. That's the way you do it.
That's it.
Either you do it or you don't.
Exactly. You don't go in there.
You read The Prince, Machiavelli.
Yep.
And that's what you do.
Right.
And other than that, I mean,
if you don't have the freaking sack for that,
no.
Then get off the
that's
pot.
That's exactly right. Because, and I agree. And there's no question.
And that's
about
why
it.
You only do it if it's an actual threat to your national security.
That's why you should. But let's assume for the moment that you're an idiot and you're president, but I repeat
Bush.
Myself, that you should not undertake a war unless you've already won it.
Yeah.
I mean,
that's the Sun Tzu thing.
That's the Sun Tzu, right.
Right.
What you basically do is you have it all plot. We realize that there's a fog of war and in a battle. In a battle, you don't necessarily know. But in a war, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, the Japanese knew within months after Pearl Harbor. They knew they'd lost.
Weeks.
Weeks.
No, they knew before Pearl Harbor. The commander said, I will promise you 6 months of victory, and then that's it.
Right.
And that's exactly what they had.
And the German generals knew fairly quickly that the war was over as soon as after Normandy. It was basically a rear guard action. Of course, what they wanted to do was sue for peace, but Hitler wouldn't have it.
Well, anyway, after Russia, really, after he
blew. Well, yeah, I mean, really, he destroyed the army and everything else. But the point is, my point is this: that this is where when a nation loses its will, and believe me, we never should have been in any of those wars.
Right.
It was not a threat. Korea, give me a break. The damn North Korea is the size. I don't care what you talk about. It's the size of this county here. And it's run by some tin pot guy or whatever it is. There's never a threat to the United States. What are we doing? We still have 50,000 troops, 35,000 troops.
By that logic, though, I mean, look at Germany. Germany is you know, no bigger than Texas. And it certainly caused a huge threat throughout the
But that was then. That was then. Well, let me tell you. Again, I don't want to go into that. There's some argument in that. But, you know, we've still got, what, 1,250,000 troops in Germany or something? We've still got 100,000 troops in Germany. This is 60 years after the end of the war. We still got 100,000 troops there. What's that all about?
Well, I mean, they have been talking about Rumsfeld actually proposed that they start bringing those kind of troops away from
Thank
there.
You so much. Yeah. About time. You know,
I think Operation...
Classic case of... There's nothing so permanent as a temporary program.
Yeah. Now, I think we should institute a government policy, BOBBY, which stands for Bring Our Boys Home Yesterday.
Ah. Well, again, what you might hear about, of course, on this.
Bring Our Boys Back. That's what it was.
Bring Our Boys Back, yeah. The people that would email the Jimmy Doan Show on this would say, don't you support the troops? I support them being alive.
Yeah.
Mostly. And the way you're going to be alive is here.
Well, look. You can support the troops without supporting the war.
You can pledge allegiance to the United States.
That's no question.
You can pledge allegiance to the United States of America without pledging allegiance to the government.
Absolutely.
I mean, I'm a big fan of the Grand Canyon and the plains and the fruited plains.
And even the Constitution. But
these guys that aren't doing the Constitution, they have no clue. I mean, again, we are reaping as ye sow, so shall ye reap. And we are reaping the rewards of 40 years of government-run indoctrination, which tries to teach victimhood and what is it called when you lean on somebody else to get your money or whatever it is? It's
extortion.
No, it is dependence.
Dependence.
Yeah, victimhood and dependence on dependent. The government will take care of me. I don't have to do anything.
Well, we're getting off track a little bit.
Okay, let's move along. Sorry. That was from the minimum. Okay, I was talking about the minimum wage, and the minimum wage is by any...
How the hell did we get where we got? Minimum wage.
No, we started on minimum wage, I think.
Well, we were on Bush, yeah, exactly. Minimum wage went to Bush, went to stay in the course.
So
went
easy.
To
see how that works? It is truly amazing how
wonderful place.
The labyrinthian Jimmy Doan show.
Eric is right now shooting yes! at the computer right. as he's mixing this.
That's right. He's sitting there trying to, what do I say about this? By any stretch, this is the classic case I've seen this, when you, by any mathematical stretch, any decent, even indecent economists would tell you that the minimum wage hurts the people that is designed to help. Anybody knows this. The only people that...
What do they do? Just ignore their own economists, the Democrats, when they push a program like this?
I guess.
They tie in the politics to the economics, and it just gets silly after a while.
Well, it would be... You know what's so funny about this? You say it's silly, except that there are actual people here who are harmed.
Right.
And we're talking millions of people that are harmed. Right. There are something like 4 million people, I was reading someplace, something like 4 million people, and now this is out of a workforce of 110 million... 4 million people make minimum wage. Now, in spite of what you might say, these people are not permanently in minimum wage. And if they are, they probably deserve it. I mean,
anybody that works
for minimum wage for 30 years, first of all, they must be making it.
Right.
I mean, here's the deal. You show me somebody that's been making minimum wage for the last 20 years, I don't think they need a raise. They've been doing okay.
Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. And Kennedy, that's what Kennedy's quote was, they haven't had a raise in 10 years. And I'm thinking, it's not the same folks.
No, it isn't the same folks a year ago.
Right.
I mean, that is, you talk about the people that are the most mobile, it's the people that are making the minimum. You have to learn some certain job skills. One thing that gets me about this, of course, typically the IRS and everybody else divides the population on every level you can imagine, whether it's age, height, whatever, income, outgo, by what they call quintiles. And time again, you'll see, well, the poorest 20% are... there's always going to be a poorest 20%.
Right.
I'm sorry.
Absolutely.
If you could live like the king, you could have gold all over your house, but if somebody's got... If 80% of the people have more gold and more cars, you're in the lowest quintile. Hello?
Right. Exactly.
And by their measure, you're poor. I'm sorry. In this country, poor means you're making $13,000, $15,000, $20,000.
Poor in this country is in no comparison to what poor is
in
other places.
We are not talking thatched roofs and dirt floors here.
No, absolutely not.
Poor in this country is, I would guess, and I would just take a guess, and I don't have any way to back this up, but I would guess that the poor in this country are in the top 2 or 3% worldwide.
I could go with that.
I mean, top 5% certainly. I mean, when you realize it's a place like right off our coast here, you could practically swim to Haiti, and the income of Haiti, what they call the GPG... individual income, I forget off the top of my head, I'm trying to remember. Per capita income, yeah, it's like $300 a year.
Right.
Well, here in the United States, the median income is something like $40,000.
Yeah, I mean,
it means half the people.
20 years ago, $40,000 was an awful good job.
I can tell you, when I left college in the late 60s, engineers were being paid $10,000, and you were so happy you could not imagine. This was when the Apollo program was up and everything, and computers were just starting to get digital. They were starting to get mini computers and stuff. And boy, $10,000, whew, I'm retired on that. So it's, of course, that brings up something else. Anyway, the deal is the minimum wage, anybody will tell you, even the union people, they will tell you in a hidden room that it's racist. It basically is designed to keep people of low skill out of the job market.
Well, originally when it was created, it was
to keep blacks out.
Right.
Right. It was racist. It was originally because the blacks were...
When they were allowed to finally work...
They would work cheap.
They flooded the market.
They flooded the market, right. Just the same as the Mexicanos, the Latinos, whatever are doing today. The blacks were our original invasion of Latinos, if you want to call it that. And they spoke a different language and everything. No, if the... Ebonics or whatever.
Yeah, close to it.
Close to it. No, the point is that the minimum wage was designed to shut them out of the market, and that's what they want to do now, of course, with the Latinos, is they want to basically, because they have job skills that are worth $5 an hour, but not $7 an hour. And one of the ways you get job skills worth $7 or $8 or $10 an hour is to work. You can't get it any other way. Right. So you have a choice. You have somebody today that's making $5.15 an hour. Maybe he's going to make $5 or she's going to make $5.15 an hour for 6-8 months or something and get a raise and maybe make $8 an hour in a year or so. But starting January 1st or whenever this thing gets passed, this person is going to be out of a job making $0 an hour. And how do you get job skills? How do you get an education? Well, what they're going to do is they are going to set up something like the Job Corps or something, which is a total failure. We had one out here. Nobody learned anything at that. It was another scamp. And, of course, one of the things that this is tied to, one of the reasons that Bush rolled on this was he said it was going to come, if you do this minimum wage, you have to package it with some tax relief for the small business.
This is just an amazing fallacy that's still prevalent in our government, and that is that the politicians up there will pass what they think is a bad act if the other people pass their good act,
right,
so to speak.
And they'll cancel.
Right.
Matter and anti-matter. Well, you know, of course, what happened was, of course, if this is what's so silly about this, is that George Bush Sr. got totally snookered by exactly the same thing. totally snookered. The reason this man, George Bush Sr., lost the election was, read my lips, no new taxes.
Right.
Now,
yeah.
Why did he sign the tax bill in 1990? The reason, and at the height of his popularity, because of the Gulf War thing, is because the Democrats promised him a one-for-one tax. You pass these new taxes, but the way we're going to do it is we're going to have a one-for-one balance off on every tax increase. We promise you, we swear on a stack of comic books here, that we will, along with this, what we're going to do is we're going to pass some tax relief. And then after he signed the bill, they said, ha! You idiot! You sucker! You know, and they really, they pulled the, I mean, and here is exactly, I mean, you talk about people who do not learn from history. We're talking 16 stinking years. And it's the same family. It's the son. And the guy's going to get, excuse me.
We've lost Jimmy.
He choked himself out.
Oh, my God. I mean, you talk about an idiot. I mean, this is as you say, he's going to get it in the gazon. His legacy is going to be, the second generation, watch my lips, more new taxes or something.
Right, right.
I don't know. It's astounding that they it's like Charlie Brown and Lucy. I mean,
exactly.
I'm telling you, we won't do it this time. Whoop! And he gets it again. It is exactly what it is. So anyway, that's
all right, so
moving
else?
Along. Moving along. The next thing I have on the little list here has to do with schooling. And again, once again, when the federal government gets involved in something, what do you find out? They find out that the quality goes down, the price goes up, and education is no exception, especially on a national level. They want to, they have a $13 billion, real money, $13 billion program to, quote, help poor people, and it turns out it doesn't. I have the article here someplace. I hope I didn't throw it away yet. It doesn't really matter. The deal is that the program is designed to send money to poor school districts, and it turns out it sends it to rich school districts. It is doing exactly 180 degrees from its original plan. They had a study, in fact, their own study. The government study said, whoops, the $13 billion is being misspent. It's totally going in the wrong place. Shucks. And what we need to do is more money.
Well, that fixes everything,
that
right?
Fixes everything. We need some more money. So $13 billion. Now, realize that on a $2.7, $2.8 trillion budget, this is not much. But as Everett Dirksen used to say, a billion here and a billion there, pretty soon it adds up to some real money.
Right.
And it turns out that this particular program, according to the government-run study, their own study, which I always find, I love when they do this, but it's still not going to make any difference because, again, there are too many people that are invested in the outcome on this. But it turns out that the program designed to help students from low-income families is actually, what it's actually accomplished, it has widened the education funding gap between the rich and the poor states. I mean, this is so typical of a program. And so they've identified it, and the question you have to ask yourself is, do you think anything's going to change?
No, come on.
Of course not. So anyway, while we're talking about school, let me just back up for a second. That particular article was like multi-pages long, and I could have a lot to say about it, but I think enough said. When the federal government is involved, he who has the gold makes the rules. Here locally, for instance, about half the money in the K-12 system in our county, I think it's half, it might even be a little more than that, comes from outside the county, not from property taxes, which, by the way, our property taxes are unbelievable. Still don't get what we need to get out of it. But when you suggest to these people, when you suggest to the school board, you say, look, you need to do this or do that in order to help the kids. They say, well, no, so we can't because there's the federal rule or there's the state rule, and our hands are tied. And I'm thinking, well, what are you doing here then? I mean, school board. I mean, you're not. The fact is they're turning out by their own study. I have a copy here. By their own study, the failure rate in Lateral County, Florida, in some instances, is upwards of 50%, depending on the demographic. 50% of kids entering ninth grade do not graduate. Again, depending on the demographic. Not all of them.
Right.
It's whether you're Hispanic and there's some.
They break it down.
You break it down. Yeah. But, I mean, there is a class here in Lateral County that fewer than 50% are making it. And so anyway, that's I'll talk about it some other time. Anyway, as far as the school is thing, this is something you might want to weigh in on, counselor, is the school accuses 5-year-old of sex harassment.
Right, right.
Yeah.
I mean, well, now this is this particular headline I noticed was not the only one this week. There was two of kindergarten.
Yeah, well, it's they said I read where a couple of dozen kids have been charged this year with that.
Right.
From the school. Now I say charged. It's the school that charges. They're not being charged legally.
Well, it says here, school officials consider a student's age and the specific action when determining what administrative action to take. Well, what do you mean?
He
so it's a 5-year-old and he pinched. So they've taken. So the age is 5,
right.
And the action is pinched a butt, and then they and
sexual harassment.
And sexual harassment is 10-day suspension.
Oh, I'd be ruined if they had those rules in place back when I was a kid.
Oh my God!
As your attorney, I advise you to be quiet about everything that we've done in the past.
I'm certain that I can tell you. There's many things that I've done that I'm a little nervous about the statute of limitations, but I'm guessing the stuff I did in kindergarten.
And they've been expanding statute of limitations on all sex crimes to like infinity.
Really?
Yeah.
Even after you're dead.
Really? Yeah.
Not so fast.
Yeah, seriously.
Well, I bet school administrators in a Texas school in November suspended a 4-year-old student for inappropriately touching a teacher's aide.
It's amazing.
After the pre-kindergarten student hugged the woman. No, I mean, seriously.
Let me tell you what's going on. There used to be a common law prohibition against charging any kids under 7 years old because judges realized over the centuries.
That, 10,000 years of empirical evidence.
Exactly. That kids under 7 typically didn't have the ability to conform their behavior to right and wrong. I mean, they act like little insane people, basically.
Right.
And you can't, to tell them what to do is like holding, it's like King Canute trying to stop the tides.
Right.
Know, no dog shall bark, dog shall open their mouth, you know, when I command, and it's just like, so, but that's been changed now. People are starting to, they're so crazy about all the sex stuff that, by God, they want to catch these kids before they even know that sex is a bad word. They're gonna teach them that it's an awful, horrible thing and that you're traumatized if anybody gets close to you or touches you in that area.
It's for the children.
Well, yeah, there are so many ironic, on so many levels it's ironic in this particular article because the Lincolnshire principal's name is Darlene Teach. I'm serious, and but that was one of the things. And anytime a student touches another student inappropriately, it could be sexual harassment. Teach said, love it. Teach said any student, regardless of grade level, can be cited for sexual harassment. Any grade level, it doesn't matter. And of course, what she does is what I love. This is if someone has been told a person does not want this type of touching, it doesn't matter if it's work at school, it's called sexual harassment. She described the incident as a learning opportunity, typical of teach the teacher, as a learning opportunity. Let me tell you something. I have seen kids do this. This happens all the time. This is one of the fun things. And didn't we all do this? Somebody will walk up to you and say,
I turned into Curtis, no.
Yeah, yeah, right.
That has never happened.
I've read about this, where you see a kid and he's standing there, smile on his face, and you say, "Don't touch that."
Right.
And the kid goes,
"Boink."
And he goes, "Boink." Right, exactly. Homer. And you say, "Look, don't touch that." And he looks up at you, and goes, "Dink." I mean, this is what kids do.
Yeah.
I mean, are you kidding me? Yeah. You know, if you tell a kid not to do some kids, seriously.
Well, I'm telling you, the mentality is just all about control. This reminds me. I'm gonna digress for a second.
Okay.
And tell you a little story. Exactly. I was at the pound the other day with my 10-year-old daughter, and she wanted to hold one of the cats. And they said, okay, but it's got to be in this special room, blah, 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 blah. And she said, okay. And then she wanted to go into the room with all the cats. And they said, you can't go in there. And she said, why not? And they said, because if a cat scratches or bites you, we have to put it down. And, of course, the 10-year-old says, That's what kitties do. You know, that's a stupid law, she says. I know. She looks right at the woman. She says, that's a stupid law. She goes, that's what kitties do. They scratch and bite. It's like, yes.
My mommy and daddy will sue the hell out of both of you.
And what did the lady say?
Nothing. What could she say?
Nothing. I mean, it's the law.
Yeah, it's the law.
I'm just doing my job. Right. That's the other thing.
I'm just doing my job.
Yeah. It doesn't matter. I'm sorry. You know, rape, pillage, fire, brimstone. I'm just doing my job.
Hide behind it. Absolutely.
That's it. No, they fall back on that.
It's the law is the most non-substantive defense of anything.
Oh, my God. So anyway, that tells me a lot. That's a good story. I like that story.
You know, if you want to see what's going to happen to you eventually, look and see what they do to the kids now. Because
the kids are learning. I mean, look, as you get done, so shall you do, kind of thing. They're teaching kids in the name of teaching kids nonviolence. I think they're teaching them violence. I mean, the fact is, when you tell a kid, you scare the shit out of them, of course. When you think about it, a teacher is 5'5", 5'6", or a guy teacher 6 feet tall. The little kindergartners are 3 feet, 2 feet tall, whatever it is. And you're this giant. It's like out of the guy who climbed up the big vine, you know, up to fee fi fo fum, whatever it is.
Jack and the Beanstalk.
Yeah, I mean, seriously, the thing is that you have this towering, huge figure telling you, shaking with a frown on its face, saying, don't do that! Yeah. Thunder, thunder, thunder. I mean, you talk about child abuse.
Yeah.
That's got to be as close. I'm serious. You say no. The child is traumatized to that extent. Then what the child learns is that violence is okay. The violence, even though you're saying, don't hit your neighbor, they're using violence to do this. It's like the war. You know, if you're going to kill me, I'm going to kill you. I mean, that's one thing to be self-defense. But, you know, a kid 2.5 feet tall doesn't have any self-defense. I mean, you know, they're totally, as Stephen Molyneux, and I love him for one of his great, he went through this whole thing on the disparity of power, what they call the disparity of power. And one of the major disparities that you can't get away from, and it's a very hard thing, is the disparity that occurs between parents and children. I mean, automatically, you are 10 times the weight, 20 times the weight and size of the kid. So how do you not, quote, abuse just by being there? Well, it takes some work. That's what parenting is all about. And, of course, when the state is involved...
Listen up, Kurt.
That's right. When the state is involved, we've given them all the guns, and they can't be sued for it. They have sovereign immunity, and we've given them, as he says, a wish list. You know, educate the kids, and we've given them all the money. And in fact, not only have we given them money, but we said, if you don't have enough money, you come into my house and you take it. You know, don't ask me for it. Take it by violence. And yet, of course, then the question is, what happens if the kids don't educate it? What happens if the roads don't get built? What happens if the stuff that we've asked them to do doesn't get done? What do you do?
This is what happens when you turn a guy loose on the sound effects over here.
Yes, and I love it. I was wondering what happened to him. I'm with you. That's good. I like it, Gino.
Yeah. All right, so let's move on. What else we got?
The next thing I had was this Kansas City inmate was charged with mailing a bomb to the Virginia court.
Yeah, it's a mystery, I guess. What kind of a bomb?
It says a prisoner of famed high-security Leavenworth Prison was charged yesterday with fashioning a letter bomb and mailing it to the federal courthouse in Richmond, authorities said. I'm blown away because it says here he's done
it before. I'm blown away.
Yeah, I'm blown away.
No pun intended.
When he mailed the bomb in October 2005, along with a letter several days later that contained a powdery substance labeled anthrax. I mean, how did it get out of the jail? This is maximum security.
Well, I ordered my anthrax to the jail.
No, but I mean, seriously, what did you do? Drop it out the window? I mean, there's no... Where'd you get the stamp?
Carrier pigeon. He waited till the wind was just right, and he dropped it out, and it floated over.
He probably did what one of those guys that got out had fashioned what looked like, absolutely like a perfect Glock, like out of soap or something, and got out. But anyway, Hamrick had made threats to public officials and mailed dangerous devices from jail before, court records show. Wow. In 1987, from a state prison, he mailed letters.
You'd think you'd lose your mailing rights.
You'd think, threatening to kill President Reagan while serving a prison term for that offense. He threatened to blow up a West Virginia courthouse. A United Airlines flight, and NAACP.
I remember that guy.
Okay. Then anyway, Hamrick then constructed a bomb while an inmate at a county prison in West Virginia, according to a 1995 civil war. The bomb, comprised of a 9-volt battery as a power source, steel wires, three butane lighters, lighters as the explosive, and an unidentified pink substance speculated to be lip balm, which was to serve as the detonator. I mean, listening to the Jimmy Don't Show, should we hire
that guy in government?
No.
I mean, that's ingenious.
We are not putting the makeup of the bomb
You're going to put the makeup.
In fact, delete, edit that stuff out.
Okay. Note to Eric. Yeah. Delete last 2 minutes of how to take a 9-volt battery as a power source, steel wires, three butane lighters as the explosive, and identified pink substance speculated to be lip balm. What the hell? How does lip
balm? It's lip balm.
Oh, that's what it is. Okay. They misspelled it. They put it B-A-L-M. It's lip, B-O-M-B, which is to serve as a dinner. Okay, that's good. I'm just astounded that first of all, here's a guy with a record of making threats and mailing stuff in the high super Leavenworth maximum, right, and he does it again. I mean, what does it tell you about the security out there? I mean, you're going to Leavenworth. Oh, okay.
Well, here's another one of my metronomes, just mailing it out here.
Yeah, that's right. I'm mailing my watch from my grandfather, my railroad watch from my grandfather, mailing it so kids will have it, you know, tick, tick, tick. Don't worry about it. So this is great. Anyway.
All right, what else we got?
Okay, I was going to tell you a little bit, an update on the Coast Guard. We talked about this a couple weeks ago, about how they had decided to use the Great Lakes as a target practice for the new Coast Guard guns.
Hit the guns.
That's right. So anyway,
quick on the draw there.
It turns out that it was that, again, this is a classic case. They backed off and they said, well, we've withdrawn temporarily, but we're going to come back with it. The problem is it's 100% illegal with the treaty we signed with Canada. You're not allowed to use guns.
We make it legal.
That's right. We need to get that from number one Star Wars.
Yeah.
I know, but it was number one.
Yeah,
I think
it was
Star Wars number one. I will make it legal. Mm-hmm. Okay, next, let's see. Do you want to do environmental?
The more you tighten your grip, Tuck, the more star systems will slip through your fingers.
There's a little Star Wars for us.
There you go. That's right.
Let's talk about the environmental update. European bears.
This was fascinating because we talked a little bit about the hangar dogs a minute ago, and of course they're buried in snow. I mean, we have pictures.
That's,
I mean,
great.
Seriously,
no, that's all because of global warming.
It's all, but in Europe,
yeah,
in the
extreme snow, it just makes perfect sense.
Exactly.
You know,
it's like that movie, heats up, which cooled everything off.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, global warming, we're going to hit an ice age soon.
Do you remember when you were growing up that there was a mythology going around that if you put hot water in the freezer, it would freeze faster?
Yes. Yes.
Do you remember that?
Absolutely.
Do you remember that?
Absolutely.
I remember that, man.
I mean, who hasn't heard that? And who hadn't believed it?
Right here.
Yeah. I mean, seriously.
I called bullshit on it. I remember the guy telling me, and I was like, no.
Yeah. Well, of course. But I mean, there are so many people today that believe that.
Yeah.
I mean, kids especially. It's like, right. and they believe it past Santa Claus.
The molecules are moving faster.
They slow down.
Exactly.
It's like they like accelerate into cold.
Right.
You know, once you start to drop from 212 down to freezing, they're moving ass.
That's
I mean,
right.
they haul butt.
They get some momentum.
I mean, what's like dropping off a cliff?
Right.
You know,
exactly.
It's like if you drop it off a low part, it doesn't move very fast. But
right.
I mean, it accelerates and it just it hauls ass. And I mean, sometimes it like overshoots. You know, your freezer. Think about it. Your freezer's at say -5 degrees. But because you put this stuff in at 212 degrees, it accelerates, and sometimes it'll overfreeze and go down to zero.
Oh, absolutely.
And then bounce back to the temperature of the freezer. If you catch it just right, you know that. Anyway, the deal is, research indicates that warmer winters and lighter snow means bears in the Cantabrian mountains now stay awake all winter and find plenty. Scientists say this is just one more effect of global warming.
Man. Come on.
No.
The whole spike is less than 1 degree average per year. Now, you can't tell me that's keeping up all the bears.
Well, apparently over here.
So I mean, look,
how can you disagree with the scientists?
Scientists say.
It's in black and white.
I got another one right here.
I got a way to take care of the bears.
Scientists say. Yeah, there you go. Look, here's one right here. Scientists say that because of the global warming, that a new species of tree has come into
A new existence. Species?
A new species of tree.
Not an adaptation.
Let me tell you about it. What it is,
the leaves
don't fall off this, and they're going to call it an evergreen.
Huh. Okay.
So wait a minute, they haven't had those.
No, but this is a deciduous tree that has decided not to.
No,
have
I'm making this all up. I'm saying that this is the kind of stuff
Got
that
me.
They come up with.
Got
man.
Me. Got me.
I mean,
Got me.
You know, it's like
the leaves. Got me. So what we're talking about is this new species. The leaves are all like all curled up into a needle shape.
Yeah.
And they don't fall off.
That's it.
Oh my God.
It won't be long before some little girl is going to fall through the thinner ice up in freaking wherever, up in Canada. And they're gonna create a cause of action, allow her to sue the federal government and throw the landowner in jail for hazardous.
It's an attractive nuisance.
Exactly.
Attractive nuisance because of global warming and of course what the big pockets will be the carbon emitting industries.
Right.
We're also gonna as a class action suit,
it'll
we're gonna
be
take
called
all of the
Nancy's Law.
Nancy's Law will allow you as a class action suit. To a class action to sue all the power companies, everybody that puts carbon into the air, and a special tax on all the cars,
which made the ice thinner
because of global warming, and that's it. That's exactly right. But and the bears can't sleep. That's the real main thing. But I tell you right now, if you go out there and ask Stitch and Pinky and Gene about global warming,
uh-huh.
I mean.
Yeah,
let me put it this way.
They
got a whole new view. Let me tell you something. They sent us a picture. Literally, it looked like a Yeti coming through there. All you could see, literally, was a total whiteout with this head coming through the snow. That was one of the guys. I mean, you couldn't tell who it was, but I mean, we're talking 8-10 feet of snow on the drifts, certainly on the side, 20-foot drifts. And as you well know, the Denver airport was closed for 3 or 4 days. I mean, totally. I mean, they had snow plows running 24/7. They still couldn't get the
runways. Yeah, that warming's out of control, man.
Yeah, that's right. Well, my answer to this is, so what?
Yeah. Well, yeah, always has been.
So what?
I think it's a great
There's
answer.
Nothing you can do about it. I'm telling you. Well, I tell you what I was going to, along the same line, I'm going to bring up an article that I wanted to write back to the Gainesville Sun. This is by Rob Brinkman, who's one of our local socialists here in Gainesville. He's chairman of the Suwannee St. John Sierra Club, and he's talking about how we shouldn't have nuclear coal power, and you know we need to get back to padding bicycles, right? Of course, what does it take to make the bicycle, so forth, near mishaps. He talks about the problems we're going to have, and he says the problem is 2050 is too late to address global warming. The emerging scientific consensus is that we have a maximum of 10 years before the climate spirals out of our control.
Oh, my God.
Well, I'll tell you. Our control?
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Perfect.
Now,
yeah, exactly.
Hell,
right
yeah.
There. It's his last two words sum it up. Write him back and tell him to push the thermostat back the other way.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Out of this article is three columns long. It's a fairly long. It's an op-ed piece.
Did they get that in that paper?
With the Gainesville Sun.
Yeah, Gainesville.
Which is the Gainesville Sun is the Daily Worker here. I mean, for all intents and purposes.
the
I mean, seriously. But I mean, this is what I'm thinking there. I would love to last. I may have to give up smoking or something. I'd love to be here for 10 years and talk to Rob and say, well, now it's done.
It's over now.
So it's spiraled out of control. Now what? What are you going to do? I mean,
yeah, exactly. You're right.
What this points up is the market figures all out.
Do you think let's face it. Everybody has this idea of global
nature,
warming.
That's all it is.
Like the movie The Day After Tomorrow. They think it's going to happen in 3 days.
Right. Well, even if it doesn't.
It's going to tip the scale's going to tip one day.
Right. This is spiraling out of control.
Right.
Will happen is the earth will spiral into the sun.
It'll burst into flames.
That's right.
Think
about it. You're exactly right. It's like when you strike a match. I mean, nothing happens until suddenly, kaboom!
That's it. That's what they think. You know, the particles in the air are going to reach
a critical temperature.
Right. Like the particles in a smoke-filled room, and there's going to be a flash fire from the upper atmosphere.
And we'll be scorched clean. Scorched clean. And I'm saying, so what?
Carbon unit.
That's right. So what?
Get rid of the carbon
units. That's right. The polluting carbon units. Yeah, get rid of them.
Hey, this is Engineer Eric from the Jimmy Doan Show. You just got done listening to part one of the December 23rd podcast. Check the Jimmy Doan website for part two. It may be posted.